Last Thursday, y'all, we all saw a very frustrated Tom Brady on the sidelines. Max, can you believe this? Tom yelling at his teammates during the Bucs 2019 loss to the Bears yesterday. His head coach, Bruce Arians, asked about it. Here's what he had to say. Take a listen.
I don't have any problem with it. At least I don't have to go back there and cuss them out. They've already got the air full by the time I get over there. So Tom's got to be Tom. I'm not going to ask him to be somebody different. He does a good job of patting him on the back, too. He might explode, but he's going to go down there and pat him on the back and get him going.
All right, RC back here with us. Listen, Tom's got to be Tom, and Max has got to be Max. Cliff Kellerman's got to be Cliff Kellerman. Ravine Kellerman's got to be Ravine Kellerman sometimes.
Ravine.
So with that being said, my dearest Max Kellerman, where are you on this? Can you believe how mean Tom's being?
When I first saw it, I thought, you know what? If anyone has the equity in the league, obviously not on the team yet, but in the league, to chew out his teammates publicly, it's Tom Brady. It's what a quarterback has to do sometimes, and a competitor, and the GOAT, and all that stuff. And he used to do that on the Patriots, too. He'd be demonstrative towards receivers if they, you know, he'd throw the ball. He'd throw, not an interception that often, but there would be some miscommunication on play. He'd be pointing to his receiver, and I'm like, he's kind of calling out his receiver publicly. Like, you know, okay, but that's how he does. And you know who can get away with that? Players who don't make mental errors. I understand that. They used to say this about, like, Joe DiMaggio, right? Like, he never made a mental error in a game. And that's Tom Brady. So I'm not setting it up for the punchline here, guys. I'm being honest. I'm like, I guess Brady can do that because that's a competitor and he doesn't make mental errors. And the fact is, he's not chewing his guys out for lack of pass protection there, which was shoddy at times because, hey, Tom Brady, I thought you got rid of the ball in record time and everything. I thought that was what you'd do. No, it was mental errors the offensive line was making. They were doing the moonwalk the wrong way down the field. It was a rally killer, as he said later. So that's all legit. But, brother, if you do it like that in front of the whole world, you're chewing out your O-line for the mental errors. I don't think you're allowed at that point to think it's third down when it's fourth down with the game on the line. It's such a bad look. It takes moxie to go out like when people make predictions, guarantee wins and everything. The reason that takes moxie is you might lose, but damn, he must be confident in his own ability to avoid those mistakes to do stuff like that. But so it was an especially bad look for a 43-year-old quarterback, first year on a new team, chewing out his O-line, the guys who were paid to protect him, for mental errors, and then making one of the all-time gaffes of certainly of his career, but that we can remember at the end of the game.
It's a bad look, but no one really cares. If the criteria to be able to yell at people is that you can never make any mental mistakes, then no one can ever yell at anyone in the history of life. Like Tom Brady, the interception in week one was because he misread a coverage to Mike Evans. But I do think that Tom Brady and anyone who is a leader of an organization, a family, a leader of anything, like, you have to understand that there are multiple ways to lead and different people respond to things differently. I don't know that Tom Brady knows exactly how to deal with the guys on his team right now, but I'm not gonna like have a fit about him yelling at some players in that situation, and I'm not gonna like blame him because, well, he does deserve blame for not being able to count to four necessarily, but I'm not gonna say you can't yell at people because you also can't count to four. Tom Brady, you're right, he's built up enough equity to get to the point now where he gets to do these sorts of things, and Bruce Arians said this, we're not zooming in and replaying and having first take debates about when he's patting them on the back. Also, there are many different ways to lead. I wrote a cover story for ESPN that's coming out tomorrow about Tyrann Mathieu. And in talking to him, one of the things that he said about his leadership, the most important thing to it, is sensitivity. And that's not what you expect out of a fearsome safety like that. But if just making the point, there's many different ways to lead. And if Tom Brady, one of the tools in his tool belt, is screaming at people publicly, maybe that works. They better protect him, because if he upsets them and they decide that they're not going to focus or they're not going to do the job as well as they could, he has a big price to pay, which is why I think sometimes it's okay, particularly for a quarterback, to yell at an offensive lineman, because your mental mistake means broken bones for me.
Yeah, when you look at Tom Brady, right, you talked about the equity, Max. Who has more equity in this league when it comes to guys like Tom Brady. And so if he's on the sideline and he's upset with the offensive line, there's a reason. If he's upset with the wide receivers, there's a reason. And also what you understand is those are young players, right? Tristan Wirfs is going to look at Tom Brady and say, you know what? I have to be better. Ryan Jensen, who seems to get an unsportsmanlike penalty every week, knows that he has to be better. And when you're playing a tightly contested game and you are moving backwards and you hear the beep, 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 because you're going backwards because of penalties, then you know that Tom Brady's going to be upset. But let's not act like this is the first time we've seen him behave this way. I believe this has been an argument for much of Tom Brady's career when guys want to say positive things about people like Cam Newton and his attitude on the sideline or other quarterbacks who behave in certain ways and we critique them differently than we have a Tom Brady. When it was Bill O'Brien and Tom Brady and those guys had to be separated, then nothing was said. When we see Tom Brady last year against the Houston Texans berating one of his wide receivers because the route isn't where it's supposed to be, we say, but that's Tom Brady. And so we're used to this. And now, I agree with Max in this. If you're going to say and behave certain ways, it's best if you don't make a mistake. But then you listen to Dominique and you know if you played the game long enough and you're in certain situations, it's not going to be perfection. And that's what we got from Tom Brady. But there isn't people in those locker room. There aren't offensive linemen in that locker room saying, you know what? The next time Tom scream at me, all I'm going to do is this. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's saying those things because more than four or not knowing his fourth down, he knows six, and that six reigns. And those players respect him. His coach respects him. And if anybody does a ton of cussing, it's Bruce Arians. So those players are used to it, and they understand that Tom Brady's trying to get them to the promised land, and those simple mistakes are things that can keep them from getting there.
No, I understand that, and that's why when he did it, it's like I thought, okay, good, he's lead. This is what he does. I mean, if the greatest who ever did it this way, then maybe that's the way to do it, right? What I'm talking about is not that he's chewing out his teammates. And when I see him chewing out teammates, I always assume it's a mental error, right? Because sometimes in the physical execution, a guy just outperforms you or it's not perfect. But what he was clearly, to my mind, and later he corroborated this, upset about were the mental errors, the penalties. They were drive killers. And you could understand why a guy would get that upset. But when you're with a new team, I understand everything you've done in the NFL elsewhere, but you only played a handful of games with this team, and you're chewing out your O-line for specifically mental errors. And then at the end of the game, remember what we were all saying? Nagy blew this. He gave Tom Brady over a minute to go with all these offensive weapons. You know, here come the Bucs. They're going to win the game now. And in fact, that's not only not what happened, because they were tough throws on third and fourth down.
I have a question.
Although Nick Foles made a tough throw to get him in field goal range. Not only is that not what happened, but he forgets the downs, and he's standing there with four fingers in the air. That's just a, I'm not saying he can't chew out his teammates.
Max,
I'm saying
Max,
that's a bad
look. I know Dom has to go. But Max, you don't, like, at the time that things are happening with your offensive line, you can't be a leader that goes, when, but what if I mess up later? It's about the now. It's about the present. And Tom Brady understands that. And so the fact that he did that later has nothing to do with the moment he is being a leader. Those are two separate things, two separate circumstances and situations. So that's not the way it works. I understand that you're saying he has to be better, but that has nothing to do with the way he talks to his players.
Go ahead.
I just want to say real quick, I agree in the moment. What I'm saying is it sets up a situation where you can't have that mental error from Tom Brady at the end of the game.
Yeah,
that's
what
I'm saying. Those are the stakes of having that kind of leadership. Go ahead,
it's just a bad look. Like, I mean, who cares? That just makes it a bad look. It doesn't impact anything. The one argument that I would make is that when you yell like that, it's not really helping anybody. You don't eliminate mental mistakes by yelling at people. You eliminate mental mistakes by practicing the right habits up until that moment. Like, just like being a parent, like, in that moment when you're yelling, you're not yelling because it's going to help the kid. You're yelling because you're angry and you're upset. Like, that's not, to me, that's not teaching, that's not coaching, that's not leadership. That's just, like, making you feel better. That's catharsis for you. That's not actually helping in that moment. And maybe it makes Tom Brady feel better, which makes, in turn, makes Tom Brady play better. But you know what probably helps? helps is if you go over there and you talk to them about the mistakes that they made. If you bring that same energy to the practice field, when those mistakes are made on the practice field, because I promise you, all the things that went wrong in the game are things that have been going wrong since they've been practicing. So bring that same energy there. And the worst part about that is it's embarrassing. Like, these guys are going to be embarrassed. We started this show with the Josh Norman thing. When you play in the NFL, you're going to be embarrassed, but you don't expect it to come from your own people. But Tom Brady has the credibility to get away with it. It's just not the type of leadership that I respond to or I necessarily think is the most effective type. But it's Tom Brady. He got 6 championships. What I know about winning? Nothing compared to him.
Well, unlike you two, that's why I chose to not play in the NFL. Didn't want to be embarrassed.
You chose.
How do you even come up with stuff like this? All I know is when he stops yelling, that's when people should be concerned. Maybe yelling is just caring. And I have people yelling in my ears all day long, so that's what I tell myself. All right, it looks like we lost Rye. All right, he'll be back with us a little bit later. He was out on that comment.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
WWE SmackDown has its season premiere this Friday night. It'll be headlined by a huge showdown between Universal Champ Roman Reigns and one of the biggest rivals, Braun Strowman, with the title on the line. On that note, let's welcome in the Universal Champ who will be defending his title this Friday night. There he is, Roman Reigns, friend of the show. Roman, so good to see you. Thank you so much for being with us. And we got a whole lot to talk about with you, sir. Obviously, this title defense, you know we're going to talk a little football, but I want to start with this. Your cousin had a little message for you. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, we're going to play that.
Okay. Let's hear it.
It's so funny how a lot of people always say, well, you know, if you ever go back to WrestleMania, who would be the opponent that you would face? And it feels like the one that would make sense, right, would be Roman. The truth is, I would be honored not only to share the ring with Roman and to go back in the WWE, but of course, man, I would be honored to, you know, have him raise his hand in that one.
Hey, Roman.
Keep it in the family, in the ring, all that. Roman, what do you got to say? What do you think about taking on Dwayne?
It would be amazing, you know what I mean? I think for any superstar of my generation to have, you know, someone on his level, someone that's done so much, not only in sports entertainment, but, you know, the movie industry, entertainment in general. I mean, the man has like, what, a billion followers online and stuff. So to be able to put that type of spotlight on our current generation and what we do within our product of WWE, that would be amazing. And just to, you know, share the ring with him, you know, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing now, being able to share the ring with my cousin Jey Uso, and to be able to tell that family story about our family business and the lineage and the history, you know, and where we come from and represent our family is pretty cool. So to just continue it and to take it to the next level, that's what I'm trying to do every single time.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, I was just looking at your history, and you're a college football guy, also like The Rock, and you played at Georgia Tech around the same time I was at Maryland in the ACC. I think we matched up a couple times. You remember how those games went?
I think it went our way, to be honest.
I think honestly, we blew you guys out one time, and then we had a 7-3 defensive battle, I believe. Yeah. I might have it mixed up, but I don't think we had to go against each other. Lucky for you, maybe.
I'll just say we can agree on being defensive guys, but Max, it was 7-3. We held their offense to 49 total yards.
That was impressive.
49. Total yards, and they did a great job too. I mean, it was, like I said, as low of a scoring game as you can get. But I think, you know, we're showing shades of what the ACC is today. It's really competitive, and it's not easy to go undefeated in that league. And I think they've shown it, you know, with the teams that have kind of, you know, rose to the top in the past few years and showed that they can compete on a national level. I'm pretty proud to be able to say that I come from the ACC.
Now, you're a 49ers fan in the NFL. What did you think of the benching of Jimmy G? Just in a Super Bowl at a 10-point lead.
So I'm not the best fan all the time. Sometimes I fall out week to week, so I'm not completely sure what's going on with that front. But at the same time, you know, football's always been a next guy up situation. And if you have a hot hand, you have a guy who's performing well. You know, injuries are unfortunate, but everything happens for a reason. And I think, you know, Jimmy G, he's a great player. He's a great leader. He's ran into these type of adversities before, and he's come back even stronger and played well. So I know when his number gets called, he's going to be there to answer it. And he's going to play well for us. Just like last year, he led us to the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, it fell a little short, but the guy's proven.
Who is your all-time 49ers favorite? I know growing up, when we were young, the 49ers were the dynasty, matching up with those Cowboys all the time. They had pass rushers like Charles Haley, who played for both teams, and Jerry Rice, maybe the greatest receiver all time. Montana, Steve Young, John Taylor. It's like a great group of a bunch of Hall of Famers on that team. Who's the guy that you look to and was like, that's my guy?
Man, there's so many, but I think Jerry Rice. I think, you know, just the way he played and his longevity and how he played at an elite level for so many years. I think he really represents what San Francisco and that our dynasty over there is all about. But you know, I'm a lucky fan to be able to have so many great players and so many good years and championship rings and stuff like that to celebrate. So it's been ups and downs here and there, but I mean, it's a lot better than most franchises in the NFL, I'll say that. But yeah, I think Jerry Rice has always kind of been the standard bearer for what the receiver, what we look at in a receiver these days.
Roman, I want to ask you one more football question before we get into your title defense on Friday night, because that's going to be intense as well. But as a former defensive lineman, who would you lose more sleep over, Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes?
Probably both, to be honest, in different ways. But I would say Mahomes, just because for me, and I don't know, Lamar Jackson's on a different level than any other running quarterback I've ever faced. But there was something that was very annoying about a quarterback who has the poise to just take one step over and one step up and still deliver the ball downfield. The guy who runs, usually we're going to be able to hit him and possibly make him fumble later on down the game or just continue to pound him. But the guy who can utilize his weapons downfield and make you turn and run and blow you up essentially and get you tired, and then he's just jogging down, getting everybody on the ball and doing it again, that's very frustrating.
Who do you think out of everyone in the NFL today, maybe excluding Gronk because that answer is too obvious, would make the best WWE star?
Yeah, Gronk, I mean, we already went to Gronk this past year, so, I mean, he's just built for it, I think. You know, he's just a goofball bouncing off the walls. He's meant for sports entertainment. I don't know. It's tough. There's a lot. I mean, if we could almost mesh some guys, because you want to take that swagger and the charisma that, the DB position kind of possesses, the skill guys have, and then you want to have, the build of the D lineman, but I think Aaron Donald would be a really nice addition. I think, you know, you take that helmet off of him, you let him come out of his shell a little bit. He's impressive. He's a dominant athlete. He's used to working at the very top and being one of the best. So if you could just teach him how to brag about that stuff, it would be probably a pretty easy transition for him.
I was a big Ultimate Warrior guy when I was growing up. So who was the wrestler that you looked up to that you were not related to?
Ah, there we go. That's key.
Gotta sneak that one in there.
Dynamic there. Bret Hart, Bret the Hitman Hart, was kind of my guy. A lot different than yours within the Ultimate Warrior. There's just something I respected. He was like a journeyman, like a blue collar, you know, a sports entertainer, that pro wrestler, go in there and wrestle for 30 minutes every single night. He just put a different dynamic on what the top looks like. And I like to think that we have a little bit of all of that nowadays. We've kind of had to mesh, you know, having the character, having the swagger, and also being able to go in there and put in 20, 30 minutes of work if you have to, which that's what I'm about to do this Friday with Braun Strowman, teach him what a different level feels like.
Jimmy Superfly Snooker love from you two, huh?
I try to keep my feet on the ground. I'm not being able to fly. You know, only when we have to.
Roman, a lot of people are dragging today. You know, it's hump day. I need you to wake them up because obviously you're the universal champ. But I hear that Braun Strowman is the real deal. So what can we expect when you two collide? Are you nervous at all? Are you putting your belt on the line?
You know, I really want to pump this thing up. But to be honest, I'm not nervous. I've been this. I'm tenured. I've been doing this for so long. Like I said, I'm on a different level, and I'm displaying it week in and week out. Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, every day is a work day for me. You know what I mean? I pack my lunch every single day. That's what I'm trying to teach these guys. To be honest, I don't think Braun Strowman deserves the opportunity. I beat him. I pinned him. I took the Universal Championship. But because the competitor I am, the top guy that I am, the face of the company, I'm going to hold my obligation. I'm going to, you know, be accountable and responsible for the being at the very top of the business. And I'm going to show up on Friday and I'm going to whoop his ass. But, you know, the main thing I want to do is I hope my cousin Jey Uso is watching this because I want him to be there on Friday. I want him to take notes. I want him to see what it takes to operate at such a high level to be able to take on, all comers any day, anytime. It doesn't matter. You have to defend that title when you have to defend it. And on Friday, I'm going to show them what's going to happen at Hell in a Cell on the 25th of October.
Keeping it in the family. All right, I'm with it. That's Friday, 8 at Fox. Roman, so good to see you. Thank you so much. We'll be watching.
My pleasure. Thank you, Molly.
All right, take care.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Huge congrats to Laker Nation. It's time to talk odds, though, when it comes to the Lakers repeating their NBA title. Caesars Casino and Sportsbook has the Lakers as favorites to win their 18th title ahead of the Clippers, Bucks, and Warriors. Big Perk back here with us. He knows what it takes to win a championship. And guys, obviously this one was unusual, right? They didn't have to face the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals. KD sidelined. Steph and Klay weren't in it. So it's going to be a completely different deal next time around. I can't wait for it, Max. Which team do you think is actually going to be the biggest challenge for the Lakers repeating?
I think it's probably this upcoming season going to be the Warriors. And I don't mean the Warriors as presently constructed. I expect there to be some changes. Let's assume that Steph and Klay return as most of what they are. I think it's unreasonable when a guy's coming off a catastrophic injury to say he's going to hit the ground running exactly the same as he's ever been. But if they're even most of what they are, that is a great backcourt. an MVP caliber player, and the best pure shooter maybe ever who can also do other things in Klay, right? Like, the opponent wants Klay putting the ball on the floor and making decisions because that's not his strength, but he can do that better than most guys who can shoot like him, and clearly he can defend. That's those two. Draymond Green, now they don't have Iguodala anymore, and obviously KD's gone, but they do have Wiggins, who is a better defensive player with them than he had been in the past, and Pascal, who is a promising young player, and lots of draft capital. I expect the Warriors to make a move, and I think it'll be a big one. That's what the front office has done, to bring in a major piece to supplement what they already have. Let's not forget, the reason primarily in recent years LeBron was criticized for winning in the East was not just that the West had more good teams, but the West had the Warriors. They didn't have the Warriors this season. Here they come again, and I think they will represent the biggest obstacle.
Yeah, we'll see what the Warriors can do, but that's like a lot of what ifs. Like, maybe they're going to be able to compile their draft capital to get a trade or pick up somebody to add to make to pair next to Steph, because I think we'd all agree that Klay and Steph are not the same as LeBron and AD. I think you can look over to the Eastern Conference and assuming things about injuries and whatnot, assuming that Durant comes back close to what he was, I think we can't overlook how impressive the Nets are going to be next year. And assuming that Steve Nash is going to be able to coach that team, which we've seen first-time coaches come in and be able to figure it out pretty quickly. Everything I've heard about Steve Nash, he's a pretty smart guy, and obviously the team like and respect him. And then you got Kyrie. I know he is on the outs with a lot of people because of some of his words off the court and some of his antics in the locker room, but the man can ball, and KD is extremely versatile. We don't take into account how good he is on defense because of how unstoppable almost he is on offense. So I think that team is pretty good, and we haven't gotten to Dinwiddie and LeVert, and if you want to go big, they got Jared Allen to protect the rim. Like, this team is pretty loaded, and assuming Steve Nash can figure out how to coach them, they can make it through the East in showdown against LeBron. Because in the B block, Max, you said guys with two top 10 players are going to be in the finals and win that. I think the Nets have that.
Top five, yeah. Well, they have two top 10.
Well, Dominique, I hate to say it, but I got to agree with Max on this one. Oh. And I'm going with the Golden State Warriors. Those two light-skinned brothers down there in the Bay Area, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. Steph Curry, with all this rest, he's going to come back and tear the league up. When you look at this guy, you're talking about a generational talent that changed the game of basketball, and a guy that don't rely on his athleticism, that could play at this level for at least the next 10 years. When you look at Klay Thompson, yes, I know he had an ACL injury, but that's not going to stop him. He has more than enough time to recover, get healthy. He took the full season off for a reason, and now he's rested. He's going to come back, and we know what type of sniper he is. When you look at Draymond is now going to be able to be that guy that's that fourth option, third option, that defensive player of the year, that versatile defender that could switch 1 through 5 pick and rolls, that could be the facilitator on the other end, which he's a hell of a passer, and he's going to anchor that defense. Draymond Green is the heart and soul of that team. And then you add Andrew Wiggins, a guy that's a Harrison Barnes 2.0, in my opinion, a guy that have a career average of 21 points a game, and now he don't have to be the number one pick anymore. He has so much pressure of living up to the hype of being a number one pick. He don't have to do that on the Golden State Warriors. Now he could be that third option guy where he could go out there and put up 18 or 19 points a game, and that's just enough to get them over the hump. Defensively, he's going to buy in because now he have leadership. He have that mentorship. He have a guy like Mike Brown and Ron Adams who are on the bench as those defensive coaches that's going to take him under his wing. And then and Max harped on this. Pascal is a guy that is a rising star, I believe, in my eyes, in this league, that could come in and give him production. And on top of that, They have a guy that nobody give credit to, and that's Looney. Looney is an underrated big in this league that I think is battle-tested. He could do it on both ends of the floor. He brings what that Golden State Warriors team need to the table for as a big, a guy that runs the floor, could switch 1 through 5. He complements Draymond Green very well in that 4-5 tandem. So I'm looking at this Golden State Warriors, and I'm going with the Splash Brothers, Draymond Green and Steve Kerr, to be the biggest threat to the Los Angeles Lakers next year.
All right, Perk, you normally come in hot and you normally got a lot of enthusiasm and you are shutting everybody down, but I knew you was wrong when you said the first words that came out your mouth was, "I agree with Max." I know that didn't feel good coming out. I know you was uncomfortable saying, "I agree with Max," and I know when you said it, you had to question yourself because it's real hard. I understand all the points you guys make about the Warriors. However, you both are predicating this on the idea that they are going to make some sort of move. Nobody here, I don't believe, thinks that the Warriors are a championship team as currently constructed. I think that is true of the Nets. So you think the Warriors right now, as they are constructed, without making any moves, can win the title?
All right.
Yeah, they have their core guys. They have Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and then they added Andrew Wiggins. That's four guys that I believe is a great core guys with a couple additions in free agency. They don't have to make a monster move in free agency or a monster trade or a blockbuster trade to get back to where they are. They still have their core pieces.
Couple things. If you want to just talk about as is, I might take the Nuggets in that case. Another year of experience, two MVP caliber players when it counts most. And if Porter Jr. can stay healthy, forget about him on defense because he doesn't play it. But offensively, that dude is real, real talented. But I want to talk about your pick, the Brooklyn Nets. Everyone's assuming KD comes back as most of himself. That would be one of the only times in the history of medicine that a guy came off an Achilles and came back as even most of himself. That is exceedingly rare. I don't think that we can just count on KD being the first guy ever who comes back as himself after an Achilles injury, number one. Number two, Kyrie Irving's talent is off the charts and his skill to match, which is very different. People use that interchangeably. But the work he's put into to refine his talent so that he can technically do all the things he needs to do is also practically historically unmatched. Then why? And he's a killer in crunch time, too. Then why is it teams have generally performed better without him? Right. So those two issues stop me, but especially KD's health stops me from pointing to Brooklyn. KD's going to have to demonstrate that he's at least 80% of his former self, because that almost never happens after an Achilles.
Yeah, I mean, what are you pointing to? People keep pointing to Dominique Wilkins. Like, that was decades ago. Like, I don't think that it's fair to assume that KD can't get back close to that. When we last saw KD, we were questioning whether he was better than LeBron, and he was outplaying LeBron, granted on a better team, but he was outplaying LeBron in the finals, when they won the championship that year before he got hurt. Like, KD is as good as it is in this league. If LeBron did not exist, we might be talking about the KD era of the NBA. So I think we are too quick.
Go back to Dominique. What?
You're talking about the Achilles
injury?
What
about Dominique? You're saying that people are pointing. You're pointing to Dominique coming back.
No, you point that as your example.
No, I'm saying Dominique. Right. Yeah, of what? Of what?
Of someone not being able to come back at full strength from Achilles injury.
Time out. No, time out. Dominique came back. He's an example of one of the few who came back as at least most of himself. Most guys since Dominique haven't done that. Like, give me examples of guys who had an Achilles and came back and you say, yup, that's the same dude. It's almost no one. People are just rushing past this. This is why I said he should not be playing when it was obvious it was the Achilles and they were saying, no, it's the calf. I said he's jeopardizing the rest of his prime by playing in this finals. And that's what happened. It's jeopardy because the history of medicine and basketball says it almost never happens that they come back.
KD's size and shooting ability allows him to be a special player in this league. Like, we've talked about this before. The idea that he's going to come back and be himself is not real, but the idea that he's going to come back and still be an effective scorer and still be 6'10 to almost 7 feet, like, all that is still going to be there. KD can still shoot over people. KD can still handle the ball and get around people because his ability to shoot. KD is going to be an impactful player. player. You're saying no one comes back the way they were. Show me somebody else that's like Kevin Durant. He's going to find a way to score. Trust me.
No, what I'm saying is, okay, I agree. But what I'm saying is if he comes back at 80% of himself, which, by the way, is optimistic, he comes back as an all-star, not an MVP. So you got to adjust down the way you think about him. If you put Paul George on a team with Kyrie Irving, you wouldn't be saying that they're about to challenge the Lakers. Sorry, Perk.
Max, Dominique, I'm lost. I'm really confused. I thought we was talking about who was the biggest threat to the Los Angeles Lakers. And here I am on this Wednesday morning, and I side with Max, and then he started jumping all over the place again and go to the Denver Nuggets, and then he started talking about sports medicine. So, you know what? I'm done. Y'all can have this argument for this morning. I'm cool. Max, I tried to be on your side for once in this lifetime, but then you just turned your back on me and went completely a different direction. So, I don't know if you're picking the Golden State.
Don't play.
I don't know if you're picking...
No. You're playing. This is Kendrick Perkins' whole routine.
Are you picking a Denver Nuggets? I'm confused right now.
This is Kendrick Perkins' whole routine. I'm just a simple country kid. I don't understand all this fancy medicine. You know what the hell I'm talking about.
Listen,
I'm
Max.
Going at Dominique because he's taking Brooklyn to win, acting like KD is the same player. It's very simple. No one has ever basically come back from that injury as the same player.
Oh,
ever.
And no one's ever defied odds in life. There always has to be a first ever sometime. Max, all I know is this. There's a bridge behind me. It's called Brooklyn Bridge. You better never cross it again. All right? You're giving no hope to these people. Now, that bridge that goes from Oakland to San Francisco, that new fancy stadium, you can cross that one. But as for Brooklyn, no shot, sir. You better stay put in Manhattan.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
All right, with Big Ben healthy, backup quarterback Mason Rudolph most likely won't see the field against the Browns this year, which means this incident from last season with Cleveland's Myles Garrett doesn't mean much this week. Here's Steelers coach Ryan Clark's former coach, Mike Tomlin.
There really is no message. My day-to-day existence kind of relays that message that you suggested. There's a lot on the table in reference to this game in terms of stakes. They're a 4-1 team. We're trying to remain undefeated. We're not looking for that low-hanging fruit or that reality TV storylines and so forth. This is a big game here in 2020.
No reality TV, you heard him. No low-hanging fruit. RC's back with us. Neek, I'm starting with you. I don't know how to feel about this facial expression I'm getting right now.
Oh,
Neek,
yeah,
talk to me.
I am just saddened by that video of Mike Tomlin. I miss his beautiful hairline. Like, he had one of the strongest ones in the league. And
how did they do him like that?
And he going bald now. He's shaving it off.
Oh, my God.
It broke my heart when I saw it this morning. It broke my heart. And then we just saw it right there. And he gave me them big eyes that I'm normally used to that being framed by that beautiful, strong, black hairline.
And it's just
gone.
He's got new hair now.
And it just made
now.
Me sad.
He's got a new haircut.
Oh,
Ryan, Ryan, don't laugh. You undefeated. Love that man.
I mean, RC, did it hit you, man? It made me sad. I miss it.
No, I rock with bald head Mike T. Mike T with the afro, with the fresh Beijing.
Bald
all
is
of
beautiful.
My guys, man.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Neek, can you focus and answer my question? Well, Garrett incident, is there going to be retribution? Is this going to be an incident now that the Steelers are facing the Browns for the first time? Because that whole thing blew up last season.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think they penalized Garrett so harshly that the guys are going to be on pins and needles in this game. They're going to be careful not to do anything too drastic, but I think it's unrealistic to fully buy into what Mike Tomlin said. Like, these guys, they can't just wipe their memory. They can't hit themselves with that Men in Black pin. Like, they remember what happened, and I do think that given the opportunity within the rules, guys are going to try to hit Myles Garrett, but the only thing that's keeping it, frankly, from probably getting out of hand is how damn good Myles Garrett has been. I think they're going to be much more concerned with blocking him. Maybe they can sucker him into a fight or something to get him thrown out, because that might be the only way that they stop this guy. So I think that the incident, the coaches obviously are going to downplay it, But man, Myles Garrett is a problem.
Yeah, I agree. I actually believe Coach in this case, guys. And I know you guys both played in the league, and obviously, Ryan, you for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and right. Dominic, you for their chief rivals at a point. But I have played Madden. So I think what I have to say, well, I didn't play it, I simulated a game. But still, I think what I have to say is important
Madden.
And valuable.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't start to analysis when I play Madden.
We can't take you anywhere, Max.
The point is, the Steelers are the hunted one. The Steelers are the one that went 8-8 last year without their quarterback. The Steelers are the one who had a third-string quarterback, pick a fight with a defensive lineman, escalate the fight by going for his helmet. When he got his helmet taken off, continued to look for the fight by chasing the dude that just took his helmet off. And then ultimately, that guy, the instigator and pursuer of the problem, he wasn't the one who got suspended. The other guy lost a big chunk of time, right? So the Steelers won that interaction. They won that exchange. And the Steelers are an undefeated team who is the hunted one by an up-and-coming Browns team who suddenly looks dangerous in a very tough AFC North, especially those top, maybe not the Bengals yet, although with Burrow soon to be, it looks like, but certainly the top three teams. I agree with Coach Tomlin. They have time to mess around here, and as you guys point out, Myles Garrett is a beast. They got to worry about winning this football game, and that's it. Besides which, they shouldn't be the ones with the gripe. The Steelers won that interaction. They started the fight, pursued the fight, escalated the fight, and the other team got punished. What are they upset about?
Yeah, and listen, first, guys, I can't wait to buy Mike Tomlin's book when he goes into the Hall of Fame that's titled The Standard is the Standard, because, like, this dude walks a straight line, and I'm around him, you know, many times, and I talk to him, and that's truly who he is. What he's saying is not fabricated for the media or so you could think he's a certain way. That's the way he lives life. The other thing is this, and I'm gonna try to explain to the people how things go. See, what happens is, like, when dudes pick fight and you get a straight up fade, and say one of those dudes wins the fight, right? Like, say a dude beats me up, but I feel like I actually am a better fighter than this dude, and I'm tougher than this dude, and I still don't like him. And then we get an opportunity to meet again, then I'm like, all right, man, let's run that back. And we gonna run it back, and if I win, I'm cool, but if he wants to run it back again, we can do that. See, that's how those things happen. So Mason Rudolph would have to be the guy out there, I would think, to instigate this fight. Mason Rudolph is where he belongs, on the sideline. So we ain't got to worry about him, right? That's not a problem. And then the other piece of it is, with Mason Rudolph on the sideline, what normally happens is, if anybody else is going to instigate something or try to retaliate, they are normally extremely close to the person that was offended, right? To the person that was hit with the helmet. Ain't nobody that close to Mason Rudolph, so they not tripping. They are worried about protecting Ben Roethlisberger, and this is where the Myles Garrett part comes into play, because Myles Garrett is a game wrecker. Myles Garrett is a game changer. For a man to be that strong, that powerful, that explosive, that mobile, that flexible, that functional, that's almost new to this league, and he's affecting these games, each and every game, at different points of the games. He's creating turnovers. He's constantly putting pressure. He's forcing errant throws for interceptions. That's what the Pittsburgh Steelers have to worry about, because right. They realize they have a number one in Chase Claypool. They realize Juju Smith-Schuster has played better. Keeping Ben Roethlisberger healthy is important. And by the way, this is an important game. The team that wins this game, to me, is the team that has an opportunity to unseat the Baltimore Ravens as the AFC North champion. So it's not about Mason Rudolph and his retaliation. It's Dominique. About how do I stop Myles Garrett from ruining my undefeated season?
Dominique.
Yep.
Dominique, I know this isn't Harvard Business School talk, but peep game. I mean, before he got into put his NFL analyst hat on, Ryan Clark had his beef analyst hat on. He's like a beef analyst. You hear that? He went into detail.
He did detail.
If this dude wins, then you might want to run it back. But if he wants to run it back, that's how it happens. But the offended party has to be the – he got the beef rules.
I need
he got the beef rules written down somewhere. Got it up on the refrigerator.
And he also –
is there
going to
be another fight? Let me see.
Him.
Beef rule number 3? No, we're good.
I do like that.
about it. I'm trying to explain it.
I do think that the idea that they... The idea, the two things that could make it escalate. I think you're both right that they're not going to come into the game like this game, the Steelers. Mm-hmm. This game is about getting Myles Garrett, but they are going to come into the game figuring out how they can keep Myles Garrett off of Ben Roethlisberger. And the problem is they can't. Because nobody can keep Myles Garrett off of their quarterback. And then when he gets to Ben Roethlisberger, how hard he hits him will determine how people react to that. So I don't think it's going to escalate, but I think it's unrealistic to believe that these guys just detached all of their memories from what happened last year. When he beats the block and gets to Ben Roethlisberger, if he tackles him in a way that guys interpret as not okay, it will escalate. That's what football players do in those. That's what competitors do in that situation.
We need to send Ryan Clark there to make sure.
Yeah, I do need to
make sure
Ryan.
This goes. You know.
Oh my God.
The rules have to be followed
so
in this
people,
in the Beast rematch.
Max played Madden, so we should listen to him. There's just a lot happening right now. All right, we're staying in the division. Let me get in one more before we say goodbye, guys. Ahead of this week's Eagles. Ravens matchup. Philly defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz said Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson is, quote, among the most dangerous players in the league. Let's take it a bit further and ask, is Lamar Jackson the most dangerous player in the NFL? I know Russell Wilson's dangerous, but I don't think he's in this conversation.
He's Mr. Unlimited now.
True.
I think that Lamar, I think Lamar is the most dangerous. I don't think he's the best, obviously, but Lamar, his ability to take it to the house at any time, from throwing the ball to running the ball, like, it makes him incredibly dangerous and tough to defend, and he will embarrass you, which I'm not sure that any other quarterbacks can do the way that he can. So, yeah, I think he is the most dangerous player in the league. Maybe not the best, or absolutely not the best. That's Mahomes, but he's the most dangerous.
Here we go, MDP, just like MVP. Well, value isn't always the best. Yes, it is. Dangerous also means the best. These are synonyms in this context. We're trying to think of ways to say Lamar Jackson is the fastest. Yes, he's the fastest. Mahomes is the most dangerous. Mahomes is a dude who can score on you at any time, no matter how many guys are coming at him or what the situation is. He's the best. He's the most valuable. He's the most dangerous. Throw in any other word that means good, and that's Patrick Mahomes.
You know what? I'm going to have to agree with Max here. You know, we're trying to find ways to say that Lamar Jackson is uniquely talented for the position that he plays. What he can do with his legs is different than we've ever seen at that position outside of Michael Vick. But Patrick Mahomes is the dude. The way that Patrick Mahomes can spark offense like this in bad situations, good situations with the people around him, is something that we haven't really seen in this league. So until something changes, Patrick Mahomes is the most dangerous player in football.
My bad. You guys are right. We've seen Lamar Jackson in this league before. That's a repeat. We've done it over before. I've seen it many times. He's not dangerous at all. He's just the MVP.
Nobody. See, there you go.
Just the MVP.
Stop being sensitive.
Just the MVP, that's all.
Don't be
Neek, I have one thing to say to you. Bald is beautiful, Neek, okay? I won't allow bullying on the show.
It's nothing wrong with bald, but that hairline was so strong. It was strong. I miss it.
Goodbye. See you guys tomorrow.
You know you miss it.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.